WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the summertime. I don't know how much Ravens football we're going to be talking around here, but I'm going to be having some Maryland Crab Cake Tours all summer long. Sort of a record pace for Crab Cake Tours ahead now that I'm back from a little vacay and a bite in the eye. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away these 50th anniversary throwback scratch-offs away at Spirits West on Thursday. We'll also have the fun Window Nation hat out. I got the Window Nation shirt going on, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. The entire month of June, you get 2 years, 0% financing when you do that. I didn't even get that deal. Got mine installed last August, so I'm in my first bug spawning of spring and summer, and bugs get in my eyes, Luke Jones, as you can see. You know what didn't get lost on me last week was I was locked out of training camp for the first time literally in 27 years. J.K. Dobbins does his thing. We talked at length about that, but observations from a couple of days of whatever the new install of Todd Monken looks like and how Lamar looks in gym shorts running around. Give me a little, a full report, not a little report, a full Luke out of training camp all week while Nestor's locked out.
Yeah, I mean, we as you mentioned, one of the big storylines was J.K. Dobbins not being out there. You and I have talked about that at length. I think you and I generally agree with the tact, you know, the approach he's taking, not necessarily being what's best for him per se. Certainly not going to be something that the Ravens respond favorably to, but it's neither here nor there. Still don't think it's a huge deal in terms of consequential to 2023. But beyond that, it was refreshing for the focus to be on the field, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson under contract. Odell Beckham was out there the first 2 days, was dealing with some food poisoning on the final day. John Harbaugh said he had some bad fish or something, but you know, Beckham took part. Wasn't like a full go participant, but he did some full team stuff. I would say it was ordinary, like in a good way, Beckham being out there. You know, he didn't do anything spectacular, but he looked healthy and was out there and health and, you know, went through it and took some reps, and it was great to see. You know, I think by and large, when you kind of look at the Ravens in their totality right now, I'll say this much. You can tell that the defense is in year two with Mike McDonald and the things that they've done differently from where they were with Wink Martindale compared to the offense with Todd Monken. They're learning. You know, the offense was definitely a work in progress, and that's not to say it was awful or anything like that, but you can tell that they're learning. And, you know, it was very much a case, you know, you did not have Rashad Bateman out there because he's, you know, had the screws removed from his foot and had a cortisone shot for that. So nothing to be to sound the alarm over, but just wasn't out there for mini camp. And Beckham was limited, so you didn't have your top two wide receivers on the field for the offense. But you can tell they're learning, and it's a different feel, a different look for this offense. And I think that's to be expected this time of year. And on the defensive side, you can tell that there is a higher comfort level with what their identity is as a unit with Mike McDonald. So there were a lot of passes broken up, a lot of batted passes at the line of scrimmage, you know, things that, you know, generally you're going to see if the defense is ahead of the offense in a setting where there's no contact. And I'll keep coming back to that. And that's kind of a boring thing to say because everyone wants observations this time of year. Who looks good? Who doesn't look as good? Who made the big play? All of those different things. I'll remind everyone, and John Harbaugh said this, Todd Monken said this, Mike McDonald said this. They're not really in an evaluation mode this time of year. This is much more still a learning mode. It's much more still of know what you're doing, know where you're line up, know your assignment, know your alignment, practice your technique as much as you can. And obviously for line play and things of that nature, you're still a little more limited because you're not doing any contact. But you know, that's really what it comes back to this time of year. Guys look good, and some young guys will turn a few heads here and there, but it's not even a training camp yet. Once the threat of contact, not even just contact, the threat of contact is introduced, that's when you start to really evaluate here and look. So, again, by and large, nothing to be concerned about, but just the reality, as you'd expect, is with a brand new offensive coordinator, a new offensive system, new weapons. Yeah, it's a work in progress. And on the defensive side, those guys, you can tell that it's year two with Mike McDonald. And I think that that's why expectations are so high there. If they can fortify the pass rush a little bit, you know, bring in, whether it's bringing back a Justin Houston or someone like that. But I think the expectations very high on that side of the ball. And we haven't talked about that as much because it's been all Lamar and the wide receivers and Todd Monken and the offense. But let's keep in mind, this was a defense that was playing at a very high level the second half of last season. So that's my thumbnail, if you will. The defense ahead of the offense, which, again, new coordinator on the offensive side of the ball, new weapons, new bells and whistles, new plays, new system, all that. That's to be expected when you're talking about mid-June, and certainly nothing to be concerned about or really be surprised over.
Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to put him on the baseball beat for a little while, put him on the pizza beat down in Wildwood for the 4th of July, as usual. But offensive line, and, you know, we talk about all these things they want to do with their $50 million Cadillac quarterback and the tight end situation. They got two good tight ends. They got all these wide receivers. They got a running back that's mad. Offensive line and the age of the offensive line and the fact that they, you know, we can add another name to the long list of Ryan Jensen's and, you know, guys that got out and got paid elsewhere, replacing that on the line. And I think another year of the center and the center exchange with Lamar is going to be a great thing. I love that they found the center that they love, that they wanted to work with in the offense. He played well last year, and he had some injury issues early last year as well. But another year stronger, another year better. I expect him to be the strength of the offensive line, by the way. And that's no disrespect to Stanley or Zeitler or Morgan Moses, any of these guys. I expect the center to be their best player on the line.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm there yet, but I think that's fair. I mean, look, it was great to see Ronnie Stanley compete and be on the field for mini camp for the first time since 2019. Keep in mind, there was no mini camp in the COVID year in 2020, and Stanley had been recovering from the ankle ever since then. So the fact that, oh yeah, and he took part in one day, got stepped on. That's why they held him out the last 2 days, but he took every rep on day one, which I was not expecting that. So that was great to see. But your point about Tyler Linderbaum, whether it's this year or whether it's year after that, whatever it is, you take a center in the first round, yeah, you're expecting him to be elite. You're expecting him to be a Pro Bowl caliber, if not an all-pro caliber center. If not, then the positional value probably doesn't align, you know, given how we typically view that position and how the Ravens have viewed that position for years, going back, you know, post Matt Burke and how they approach that position. But I think you look at the offensive line, the thing I like the most, and we'll get to left guard in a moment. You mentioned Ben Powers departing via free agency, but you just like the continuity from four of five spots returning. And not just that, but those four spots, a healthy Ronnie Stanley, Tyler Linderbaum, who had a good rookie year, and you're expecting, you know, he's an ascending player, right? He's only going to get better. You have Kevin Zeitler, who even at age 33, still playing at a high level, and we'll see what happens with him. Another guy entering a contract year, but hey, he's going to take it in stride. And Morgan Moses at right tackle. So, you know, you only have to figure out one spot, and I think that's what's so interesting, and it's not to be dismissive of it. I mean, they've got to figure out who's going to play that spot. And I think what was fascinating over the course of minicamp week was we saw the six-round rookie, Salah, Big Salah. I promise you, I'll have the pronunciation for his last name down by training camp, but I'm still a little uneasy there because it is a long one. But he was running with the ones at left guard. And again, it's not, you know, you're there's no contact yet, and that's still only saying so much. But to me, that says two things. One, he's impressing. And two, what's going on with Ben Cleveland, right? I mean, former third-round pick. He should be the guy on paper to step in, but we said the same thing about Tyree Phillips, and then they jettisoned him at the end of training camp last year. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how that spot plays out, whether it's the rookie, whether it's John Simpson, who, you know, lined up at left guard a lot in OTAs and was a former starting guard for Las Vegas a couple years ago, whether it is Ben Cleveland, who finally, you know, kind of gets in gear and realizes it's now or never. So, you know, they have options there, but who's going to really emerge? But even with that question mark, and let's face it, when you look back at the last 5-6 years, really, this time of year, generally speaking, and putting aside the Stanley situation from the last couple of years, but just They've had a position that they've needed to figure out. A year ago, this time, we weren't sure Ben Powers was going to start at left guard. And he ends up starting every game and gets paid, right? You know, had a big year and did what he did, and good for him. So they have to figure that out. But I think when you have four other spots on the line, and again, you're knocking on wood, crossing your fingers, saying a little prayer that Ronnie Stanley stays healthy. And he was healthy at the end of last year, which was refreshing to see. But when you have the other spots locked down with veteran guys, or in the case of Linderbaum, someone that you're so excited about and so confident in long term, it makes it a lot easier to figure out that left guard spot. For me, you don't need a left guard to be above average, right? You want a guy that's going to give you a high floor. Can he stay on the field? Does he know what he's doing? Is he going to give you a consistent effort week to week? Even if it's not great, can he just be solid? If they can find someone to be a solid left guard for them, coupled with the other four spots, your offensive line's in great shape then. Even with a little bit of age on the right side that might make you take a little pause with Zeitler and Moses. So, you know, we've talked about it. I believe you and I talked about it in our last, you know, big Ravens conversation, just talking about them position by position. The offensive line, I mean, it's of the utmost importance. We saw this last year. I mean, when they, especially early in the year, you know, before the injury to Bateman and how they got so banged up at wide receiver. And then, of course, Lamar's not out there at the end of the year, but you saw the difference it made with an offensive line that was more stable, you know, more consistent week to week, more continuity week to week. And I even asked Kevin Zeitler that during minicamp this week. The fact that you're returning four out of five guys on your starting offensive line, you know, how much does that help? And keep in mind, Kevin Zeitler's been, you know, he's been three, four other places where, you know, sometimes you're replacing two or three starters every year, and that's tough to do it that way. So for the Ravens to have the continuity that they have, yeah, they got to figure out left guard. But I think with everything else going on with this offense, you know, new system, more emphasis on the passing game, new wide receivers, more expectations and more on Lamar's plate pre-snap, you still come back to the offensive line being a stabilizing, you know, stabilizing force. And if it can be, and if it continues to be, I think it's just going to give them that much more of a better chance to truly play at a really high level this year.
You know, many people have come up to me in the last 5 months and said, "Yeah, they almost won a playoff game with you know, Snoop, right?" You know what I mean? So that's a tribute to the offensive line, right? When you talk about them still being able to compete at some level, it was because of the offensive line that that happened.
Yeah, I there's no question about it. And again, you know, we talked a lot about Dobbins, but the running game, you know, this offensive line run blocked at a higher level than it had the previous year. So that made a big difference. And obviously you had Dobbins and Edwards back in the picture, but it's so important. And, you know, we talked about this some last year, and it kind of got lost with everything that happened, you know, with Bateman going down, and obviously Lamar's not out there at the end of the year. His contract was, you know, a dark cloud hanging over the entire organization. We talked all about that, but, you know, we quickly forget that going back to not this past offseason, the previous one, you know, so going into 2022, the Ravens had conversations with Lamar Jackson as far as what do we need to prioritize? And Lamar said the offensive line, and they did that. Now, they needed to do more at wide receiver, and they have since done that. We'll see how that plays out here in 23. But, you know, they were able to stabilize their offensive line. And obviously Stanley coming back was a huge part of that, but it's important. It's really important. And, you know, I mentioned this when we talked about Dobbins. It's not that running backs don't matter. It's that offensive line really, really matters. And it just makes things that much more difficult. And people will say, okay, well, look at the Bengals the last couple of years. Joe Burrow didn't have a great offensive line. Well, he tore up his knee a couple of years before that. But even so, having a shaky offensive line, that's not the formula. You can get by, but if you really want to sustain success on the offensive side of the ball, you've got to have a good offensive line. It doesn't have to be best in the league, but it can't be a problem for you.
Well, we saw the Ronnie Stanley conundrum, right? Yeah. When he's not playing, how much different the whole thing operates. And that would be true with any, you know, $20 million left tackle, right? But we're at the point now we're talking about, are they a winner? Do they have a chance to win a Super Bowl? My God, they've had a kind of a stellar offseason based on what
we're seeing out there, other than the mouthy running back at this point. You know, they had all the problems with the quarterback and all the negotiation issues. And but man, they put linebacker to rest with Roquan Smith. You know, they go out into the draft and they wide receiver, and they go spend money on a wide receiver, money they don't even really have on a wide receiver, trying to win this year. Keeping these guys healthy. There's just like, and whatever that Saunders guy out there was doing, and whatever the injury bug for the organization and all the problems that they've had in recent years, it's easy for the next 6 weeks where they're not going to practice. Hopefully linebackers aren't going to be found dead in drug houses anytime soon, you know, during this offseason as well. But as long as they're not newsworthy or having problems, there's no reason to think that they can't win a lot of football games around here. They're a very well constructed outfit this time of year, minus a little pass rush here, a little question here, and a little tweak there, and whether Lamar can really do it or not. You know, this is a well constructed outfit. Kudos to the front office for putting together a reputable National Football League team again.
Yeah, I mean, Marlon Humphrey to me said it best when he spoke at the end of minicamp, and he said, "Look, you don't necessarily look at other teams' rosters 1 through 53, but you look at other teams and say, who has a good core? You know, obviously it starts with the quarterback, but what do the skill guys look like? You know, who are that team's all pro or pro bowl players? And the teams only have like one or two. Generally they stink, right? But you look at the teams that have a core group of say like six guys that everyone would love to have, every team would love to have. And I think the Ravens certainly fit that description. You know, when you look at Lamar, you look at Mark Andrews, you look at a healthy Ronnie Stanley, you know, Beckham, Bateman. I mean, we'll see, you know. And then on the defensive side, certainly you look at that with Marlon Humphrey, Roquan Smith. And, you know, you can add a couple guys to that if you want to. Depending
five
on your
first
opinion.
Round draft picks in their wide receiver room, right?
Like, sure. Now, granted, a couple of those are guys who didn't work out elsewhere.
But I would just say out loud, that's something to say.
Yeah, well, it catches your attention. Let's put it that way. But the point that Marlon Humphrey was saying is, look, we've had some years here recently on paper where we look like a Super Bowl contender and we've won a lot of games in the regular season and we've made the playoffs. But he said, it's go time. It's time for us to prove it. And, you know, he didn't go into the specifics of saying we need to get out of the divisional round or we can't lose in the first round of the playoffs. But the point was, everything is in place here. And you just said it, and I've said it. I'd love to see them add a veteran pass rusher. I still think they probably could use another outside corner just to fortify their depth there. You know, you have Marlon Humphrey, you have Rock Ya-Sin on the outside, but one of those guys, something happens to one of those guys, then, you know, you're looking at a lot of young guys who are completely unproven. So there's still a piece or two that they can add that I'm not even saying it has to be an expensive piece, but, you know, a savvy addition or two. But beyond that, everything is sitting right there. You know, everything on paper on both sides of the ball, and include special teams, because you have Justin Tucker, the best kicker on the planet by a wide margin. Everything is sitting there for them to be great and to not just make the playoffs, but to get to January and say, all right, it's go time. No longer talking about Greg Roman holding back this passing game. No longer talking about the offensive line not being quite good enough. Certainly better not be talking about wide receiver not being good enough when you consider the resources invested in that position group this offseason. Your quarterback is not thinking about his long-term contract anymore. It's there. He got paid. He's the highest, probably not by the season because Burrow and Herbert will be paid and they'll have that title, but he's the highest paid player in the NFL. Defensively, everything is in place and they're comfortable now under Mike McDonald and everything is sitting right there to go win a Super Bowl, go play deep into January. At the very least, get yourselves to an AFC championship game. At the very least, at least give yourself a chance to play to go to the Super Bowl, because
go do something in January, go win some games.
Yeah, exactly. And that's basically what Marlon Humphrey was saying. And he's right. It's go time for this team, because here's the reality. Yes, Lamar's contract is structured in a way that the cap numbers really for the next couple years aren't insane. You know, it's not as though he's going to have a $60 million cap hit this year or next year or the year after that. But this is going to be your best chance in terms of maximizing the rest of the roster. It gets more difficult after that. We saw that with Joe Flacco. It's just the reality. Doesn't mean you can't build a good roster. Let's be clear. This doesn't give any front office a pass, but you have a smaller margin for error then when your quarterback's making that much money and taking up that much of your cap. So take advantage right now. The time is now because you do have a number of guys that are going to be entering contract years. And it's not to say I don't think the Ravens will be really good next year, because I think they will be, but your best chance, you know, you don't want to squander this. And we talked about this a lot back in 19, right? Such a devastating upset loss that they suffered to the Titans. But what did everyone try to say that to comfort themselves? Well, they were a year ahead of schedule. No one thought Lamar would be the unanimous MVP.
Remember that when the Orioles lose the ALCS in six games, right? We're talking about next year,
right? It doesn't mean you ignore next year. It doesn't mean that you invest everything in this year and then you don't care about the future. But the point is, nothing.
Michael Elias
is
going to have that in the next 6 weeks too, as to whether this is a real year or whether this is just, it felt good that we got there and we'll bum Phillips it. We knocked on the door. We'll kick it in next year. Like I don't think any franchise in the modern vernacular can think that way. I mean, look at the Nationals and the Capitals having their parades, and it comes and it's over. I had Jeff Montgomery on last week. You saw the Royals come in here, right? We went out to Kansas City and there's 5,000 people sitting in that stadium last month. And I said, what happened there? It came and it went like this. And we talked about Machado and Wieters and these guys. Gone. You know, it's all Joe Flacco over with. You know, we sit here talking about Ray Rice's and these guys. So 10, 12 years, man, this thing happens fast. And the Ravens are very, very much built to win tomorrow. Not next month, not next year. Like, they need to win here and now. And I don't know that Harbaugh or DaCosta feel that sort of pressure, or where Bisciotti is in his metamorphosis into being a former owner and selling off the team at this point. But this is their best chance right here, right now, especially going out and spending money on Beckham, spending big money on Roquan Smith, which, you know, you weren't happy with that amount of outlay. But all that being said, they're playing over cap this year in a lot of ways, with the quarterback contract giving them the flexibility we talked about for a year and a half when they were fighting with him about how they could construct something around him that would allow them to win. To me, that's not 26 or 27. That's 23 or 24 based on where they're going to be eating cap money 2 years from now. I know the cap's going to go up and all that, but all of it's going to go up. And the price of tackles is going to go up. And like, Justin Tucker is going to need to be the highest paid kicker in the history of the world. And like, this is going to be money that's going to be spent out that, You better smoke him while you got Odell Beckham, because you might not have him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality. When you have a lot of good football players, eventually you have to pay them or they leave. And that's just how it works. And look, the Ravens have done a really good job over the years of balancing out who to keep and who leaves. And for the most part, there have been some exceptions. For the most part, they've made the right calls with that. Now, there have been a couple guys that they paid that, in hindsight, probably shouldn't have. And there have been a couple guys, not many, who've left where you'd say, wow, you really missed that guy. You know, I haven't been many of those guys over the years.
And the Orioles haven't had many of those either beyond Machado. But I'll give you, when Gausman starts, I'm always like, ah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and maybe that right there is a good reminder of you still need to be judicious in how you pick who you're going to pay, because a lot of guys aren't really worthy of a second contract. And a lot of guys, you know, most guys aren't worthy of a third contract. So it's tough in that regard. But yeah, it's sitting right there. And look, the Ravens, you need to look no further than their own history. Look at their two best regular season teams in franchise history. Regular season, not playoffs, not Super Bowl. 2006, the Steve McNair year. I mean, that felt like such a magical year. I mean, the defense was not on the 2000 level, but it was not far off. That was a dominant defense. And McNair, you know, did a good job. Wasn't the MVP McNair, but was good enough. And, you know, they were 13-3, and, you know, the Colts are coming in and had the first round bye for the first time ever. And they lost. And they were terrible the following year. It was over. It was a one. They had a shot. They had a really good shot that year, and they didn't do it. And we already mentioned it. You know, 2019, 14-2, and 13 guys in the Pro Bowl, and Lamar's unanimous MVP, and had this historic, unbelievable season, so much fun, and they lost in the divisional round. And everyone tried to say, well, they'll be back. And we saw what happened the following year. The injuries just piled up and just crushed them.
So you're not guaranteed anything. And that's not to say, you mentioned 2026. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say they're going to be bad in 2026. I wouldn't anticipate that either. But if you're going to ask me, when is it going to be easier to have a Super Bowl roster? Is it what you have right now? Or is it going to be in 2026? Well, my question would be between now and then is, you better have drafted really well, because some of these high price guys that you have right now are either going to be older and not as good and gone, or you're just going to have guys that are going to leave because you can't keep everyone. So,
well, to your point, now, when the Ben Clevelands don't, you know, turn out, or when the Bradley Bozemans evaporate, and when the, well, I mean, the Brashad Perryman era and the wide receivers, we're getting to that point with Bateman now where, you know, like, all right, dude, what are you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is a dude year for Patrick Queen, for Bateman, for Dobbins, for, you know, I guess Linderbaum is, what, you know, like these players that are working toward sticking around or getting paid. Andrews paid. Humphrey paid. Stanley paid twice. You know, like, Lamar paid more than any of them. So, like, it really is about these guys stepping up and yeah, playing to get that number. And it's, in the cases of Queen and some of these, they're playing to get that number elsewhere. And I guess that's my point. If you really are that good, you're not going to be able to retain. You're just not.
No, you're not. And I mean, and you just said it. I mean, and Marlon Humphrey flat out said it, like, Lamar's gotten his contract. I got my contract. Andrew's got his contract. Like, it's go time for us now. And, you know, he's right in that way. And I'll go back to something you mentioned about Beckham and you know, the idea that, and this is obviously making an assumption that he plays well and he's on the field and he's a positive contributor and not hurt and limited to six games. Let's say he goes out and has the best year he's had since 2019, which is kind of what the Ravens are betting on at this point, right? So not that he's going to be the Odell Beckham with the Giants, but at least be the guy that, you know, is a 1,000-yard receiver or, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. The ideal scenario is not that he plays well and the Ravens re-sign him. The ideal scenario is Bateman stays on the field and all the potential that he's flashed, and he's flashed it. He's looked really good, you know, a little more fleeting than Dobbins even, but it's not as though Bateman hasn't had his moments and said and shown you some ability where you say, wow. But the ideal scenario is he stays healthy and puts it all together. And Zay Flowers, your first round pick, looks like a legitimate first round pick this year, even if his numbers aren't, you know, he's not going to be their number one receiver.
Well, you're going to be comparing him to Hollywood Brown the whole time, right? I mean, that's going to be
a more physical, he's a more physical, a little bit bigger. You know, he's not huge, but he's bigger than Hollywood Brown was coming out of college and a little more willing to take on contact and break tackles. But again, my ideal scenario is yes, Beckham has a good year, but Bateman and Flowers are the guys that really, you know, they both look legit and they're both on the field and healthy. The ideal scenario is you can let Beckham walk and you feel so good about those two guys. And sure, you draft another receiver next year, whatever it is. I mean, that's just how it works, right? There's a pipeline that you need at every position that matters at the very least. So, you know, that's the scenario you want. And that's how you sustain this thing for the long term. You're going to whiff on some picks. And, you know, you mentioned Ben Cleveland. I mean, it's not even a third round. You miss on a third round pick, it's not the end of the world. When you miss on first round picks, that's when it's a problem. When you miss on second round picks, that's when it's a problem. And, you know, that's where a guy that you didn't mention, but I'd throw into this group big time, or maybe you did mention him, Adafe Owe, it's go time for him. You know, this is year three as a first round pick. You know, his rookie year started out really promising. And since then, he's kind of been chasing that.
Well,
potential.
You shouldn't need a Justin Houston. He should be your Justin Houston. He should be your Matt Judon.
Right. Yeah, and you could still augment. You know, you still need veterans. And look, I mean, it's not as though Justin Houston's made big money the last couple of years for the Ravens. But you know, you want to be in a position where you're bringing in those veterans to augment what you have, not because, oh my gosh, we need another guy.
Well, they're still replacing Calais Campbell too, and they're going to miss him.
Sure, yeah, I think the defensive line's fine. I think it's solid. I think there's depth there. I don't think it's a problem, but I think it's a really interesting position group because go look at the contract status of everyone other than second year Travis Jones, or, you know, their third round pick from a year ago.
everyone of consequence, from Michael Pierce to Brent Urban to Justin Madubuike to Broderick Washington, they're all pending free agents. So that's this is a pivotal year for that group. And that's where, at the very least, I want to see Travis Jones take a big step forward and show me that you could be the next Brandon Williams for this team, where, you know, even if you're not going to be a Pro Bowl nose tackle, we can count on you. You know, you're going to be a guy that we're going to plug in there, and we're going to not think about it the next few years at the very least. So you want to see that. And, you know, we'll see who else they ultimately re-sign. I mean, I think they'd like to re-sign Madubuike and Broderick Washington.
Madubuike is a guy that could play so well that play himself out of here because they wouldn't be able to afford him.
Could. Yeah. I think that's possible. So that, you know, but the
point, you're wondering how they win a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, if they win a Super Bowl, that's the kind of kid that would get a lot of money if he's a part of a Super Bowl winning team.
I mean, go back and look at Super Bowl 47. Two guys who played well for them and played really well for them in some big spots, Paul Kruger and Donnell Ellerbe, both got paid very handsomely elsewhere. Did they really deserve it?
So did Arthur Jones in the end, too.
Yeah, well, that was a year later, right? But you know, that was a year delayed. But in the case of Ellerbe and Kruger, they got big-time contracts elsewhere. They never lived up to it. But you need that, sure. So the defensive line's an interesting group because you just mentioned it. It's going to be a challenge replacing Calais Campbell. Not impossible, but it's going to be, you're going to miss him. Definitely going to miss him. You're going to miss him in the locker room as well, you know, just as a leader. But, you know, there are guys in that group that should be very motivated that they're going to be playing for another contract. So it's going to be interesting to see how that group plays out. But I mean, you just look at this roster and its totality. It's not perfect, but boy, it's really good in most of those spots. You know, it is a championship caliber roster on paper, assuming health, assuming certain guys that we've mentioned take the step forward that they need to. So I'll go back to what Marlon Humphrey said. It's go time. I mean, it really is. It's time for this group to go out there and prove it. And it's great winning games in the regular season. It's great making the playoffs. There are so many NFL markets right now that, you know, the seasons the Ravens have had in recent years, other cities would dream to have that. But if your standard is truly as high as it has been for a long time, and that's winning a championship, it's time to take it to the next step. You know, it's time to, at the very least, you know, you could talk a lot about Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and unseating them. Well, if you never even get to a championship game to have the opportunity to do it, can't really talk about it. So that's where it's time for this group to go out there and prove it, not just in the regular season, but get themselves in a position to make a deep run.
Yeah, one of the interesting parts of Chad Steele not allowing me to do my job but allowing you to do yours, I don't even get their press releases anymore. They've taken me off the press releases. I've been a bad boy, apparently. When do they reconvene again? I mean, it really is a different kind of schedule with preseason and one game being less. It's not normal, and none of them want it to be normal. They want these games to feel like scrimmages, I feel.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, you'll see the young guys, you know, some of the younger rookies or second year players. You know, you're going to see David Ajabo play in the preseason, for example. You'll see Owe play in the preseason. John Harbaugh even said that. But yeah, you look at the schedule. First of all, we're still waiting to see what the official training camp schedule looks like. But it's, I don't know the official start date, but, you know, it's usually July 27th, somewhere in that neighborhood, you know, of the last week of July. And they'll report, you know, the rookies report a little bit earlier than that, and players coming off injury report a little bit earlier than that. But
summer vacation, baby.
Yeah, you get about 5 weeks here. And, you know, Odell Beckham talked about the fact that he's planning to hook up with Lamar Jackson in Florida, and they're going to throw. I'm sure we'll see some of that on social media, and fans will get excited about that. And that's good. Hey, there's nothing else to be excited about football-wise this time of year.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. When that happens and they make a tape and some pompous deal down there, we'll have to do a segment talking about, you know.
Yeah, we'll break it down. Right. So, but no.
Will Lamar be using that gym?
I'm sure he will be. That's still, you know, it's one of those things. We haven't talked about it because, hey, the deal's done. We're going to see how this all plays out. That's still one of the funniest. I mean,
as I said
to you at the time,
it was like a Saturday Night Live skit. I only wish, like, it was almost like the United Way Peyton Manning Saturday Night Live bit with the kids, right? I only wish you had seen Championship Wrestling. I did a whole wrestling thing with Dennis, because the ads that played on Championship Wrestling in 1979 on 4 o'clock, they were always the same ads. It was just great, man. You know, it was like Mr. Ray's hair weave and who what was the other thing that it was the electronics store. I can't remember what it's called. It's way out of business. It was downtown. Anyway, but it was just sort of like this low-rent commercial, John Bay style.
I told you what I thought of, though, when the commercial for the entire gym first came out. I said, this looks like something I'd see on Masson when they're not showing any original programming. Like, it felt like that kind of an infomercial. But
my wife went looking for the Orioles game against the Cubs on Sunday and, you know, saying
didn't
Peacock,
find it.
Saying Peacock into the phone, Peacock. I'm saying NBC. I'm saying Masson 1, Masson. My dear friend, and I want to give a shout out. This is from the heart. You were not a Skipjacks guy, but Jeff Amder was the guy at Skipjacks games and Clippers games that wore the red fireman's hat and ran up and down section 210 yelling, Skipper's on the warpath, go, go. He's been in a hospital. He had a fall a couple weeks ago. And, man, this guy is a lifer, you know, teacher of first and foremost, was a lifelong teacher. But also, it's just – as big a sports fan as I know, and this broke my heart. He's been in the hospital the last couple of weeks. Every time these bastards take these baseball games and F around with them and put it on Masson 2, I know this. My wife spent 155 nights in the hospital, right? So on the nights when the game was on Masson 2, we didn't get the Orioles games in the hospital. So, like, I just – it's one thing for me to be get off my lawn guy and bitch about, and we meander from football into baseball, and it's fine because I need a rant on this because it's insane that the way football should learn from this. They should all learn from this. The NHL should learn from this, putting their Stanley Cup games on where nobody can find them and watch them and in a place that they're not normally for people. It's just, sports has gotten really wacky in that way. Like, it's not that I'm an old guy, get off my lawn. It's just basic principles of, dude, there's a million things I can go. You know what my wife did instead of watching the Orioles because they weren't on? She went for a 3-mile hike.
Yeah.
And had a good time and got her exercise in. And I'm not stressed about it because they're just making so much money that they can throw me out and let you in and justify it somehow that it's not discriminatory or it's just okay because this is the way we operate and there's something wrong with Nestor. Like, everything they do is of a judgment, from the prices they charge to the fan experience to what they do. It's just amazing how many choices we all have in the summer. You know what I mean? To do things. And I just want to give Jeff some love. Tell him to get well soon. But restricting games from people in the hospital really pisses me off, you know?
Sure. Well, and I was talking about this with someone on Sunday. You know, you and I, we've talked about this plenty of times. We don't necessarily say it on the air, but I don't have amazingly fast internet. And you know, it's not as though I'm totally in the middle of nowhere. I'm not in a city.
Luke, the one thing I learned, and I talk a lot of politics around here, and having Heather Mazier on over in the Eastern Shore and Ben Card and different people, that the elected officials in the state, they drive around in the way that I drove around on the Crab Cake Tour for 2 years and see how many places in this state online education is not available unless you go pull into town and steal it from the Royal Farms, you know, in Cambridge and in these places. So you don't live far off of 83, but you know, my wife's in the other room trying to hook up technology all throughout central Pennsylvania right now. But I would say to you the same thing. The streaming thing, it's like you're just telling people to not watch the game or that they can't watch the game. It's terrible. It's awful.
Or at the very least, you're either telling them not to watch or we're telling you that we're going to make this a pain in the butt for you. Because, look, I'm not saying – I wasn't saying that for anyone to take pity on me. I can stream, but it does – impact then what else I'm doing on the internet. Then if I try to stream the ball game and also watch videos on YouTube on my phone, that's not going to work. Something's going to, it's going to start, you know, it'll start buffering.
It reminds me of my new place. They put the spigot on the dish when I do the dishes with the water and I don't get enough water out of the spigot to even, and the plumber told me they restrict all of them now legally for less water. And I'm like, I can't wash my dishes. It's like, it's like spitting on my dishes. When your internet's spitting, you can't stream the friggin' Oriole game.
Well, and it's even worse. It's one thing to talk about you can stream it like me, but it's not the perfect experience and it's a little bit of an inconvenience. But there are plenty of people in this country who have no access to
high-speed internet where even if you say, you know what, I'm an all-in fan, I'll pay for Peacock, I'll pay for Apple TV+, I'll pay for whatever, you know, whatever you want to talk about to stream in addition to having cable or satellite. And there's
no
option.
Has anybody done the math on... I mean, this would be a great summer project for you. Do the math on if you bought everything you'd have to do to watch 162 baseball games, the amount of money. And then more than that, the amount of money they are sucking out of your rectum that you don't even realize off of your cable bill if you have a cable bill like I have again, and then not show me the spring training games, and then tell me that I got to go do this and that and jump over this hoop on a Saturday morning, a Sunday afternoon, a Friday night to go watch their game. It's insane. It's insane. And they're trying to grow the sport. No, they're not. They're trying to grow their revenue. They don't care about anybody or anything, and they have no accountability. And they're going to open their books soon. He promises.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. But
it is an amazing place we are, where the Orioles are good again, and I really want it, and they make it difficult for me to get it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's Major League Baseball. That's every market right now. I mean, I saw something. I wish I had it in front of me right now because I saw it a week or two ago. But the Yankees, who even have – they even have a in-market streaming deal with – I think it's Amazon. I believe there's a game of the week – in the New York area, you know, the metropolitan area, where the Yankees are streamed on Amazon one day a week. And there was someone showed the Yankees TV schedule for like a 6-day period, Nestor. And I think it was on 5 different networks over a 6-day period. There were 6 different games shown.
How does
on
Uncle
five
Leo
networks.
On the stoop, who was relative to the Sopranos, get his baseball game? He's only 68 years old, but and he's teched up and he might be on Facebook, but like, Leo don't want to chase that around 5 days to try to. I mean, it's they just TJ Brightman, where are you? Who's running the place? John, you're supposed to be the smart television digital guy and all that. This is half-assed.
But
it's half-assed.
It's not TJ Brightman and John. They're part of the group. This starts with Rob Manfred. Rob Manfred is the cover, and he works for the 30 owners, and they love this because Uncle Leo or grandma or your dad or whoever it is who can't stream the game, they don't care because Peacock's cutting them a big fat check. They don't care about that. And they're just saying, well, you don't need to watch all 162. You know, you don't need to do that. You know, think back to 40 years ago. The games weren't on every single day. I mean, that's the mindset. And I'm not forgiving that. Let's be clear.
Hey, sports in general, since I started this gig doing what I do to promote local teams, in general, they've done just about everything they can do to chase me away. Like, just in general, from the Maryland Terps making us drive halfway to Rockville to get press credentials and a parking pass to then park somewhere near Hyattsville, to the Orioles throwing me out 17 years ago, to them doing nothing but lying, which is why I sort of got thrown out to begin with, because I get sort of fed up with the bullshit. And now the football team, it's insane, but that's just me being a journalist and sort of a concerned fan with tough questions for billionaires. This is really just about my poor wife wanting to watch a baseball game because she lives in the city and is like, hey, the team's exciting. They're playing the Cubs. It's Sunday. I like baseball. I mean, watch the game, and they won't give you the game.
Yeah,
it's mindless to me. It really is.
It's a fascinating juxtaposition of seeing that compared to what the mindset was not even that long ago. Let's say 10 years ago, Nestor, when even the Orioles with Masson, if there was going to be a game on pre-broadcast TV, it was generally the Sunday games, right? And the idea, I assume the idea at that period of time was it's Sunday. People are getting together. They're more likely to be watching TV. They're barbecuing on a summer afternoon.
How does a bar get the game? How does a bar put the game on when you don't have the game? I'm thinking like some
bar.
Everybody had Channel 13 when they put a Sunday game on, right? Like my mom, if she had rabbit ears and could watch the Orioles on a Sunday afternoon and fall in. At every nursing home, they get Channel 13. They get Channel 45. Like, so it's.
It's just swung in the opposite direction of it used to be Sunday. A Sunday afternoon game might be the day where you'd say, okay, we're going to make this, we're going to easy access, right? Everyone, even people who aren't Orioles fans or people who don't go to the ballpark, but hey, they've heard their friend, you know, their friend's coming over for a barbecue and they're a baseball fan and hey, we'll watch the game and hey, that's a pretty good product. Maybe we'll go get some tickets. That used to be the mindset 10 years ago. And now it's the opposite. Even if you subscribe to Masson and let's be clear, it's a few times a year this is happening now, but you feel like it's only going to get worse in that regard. Probably.
Still wrong. It's a broken trust.
No, I agree.
I mean,
with
it's
you.
A broken trust. At heart, people ask me about my issue with the Ravens. At heart, it's a broken trust. You lack integrity. You're not doing what you said you were going to do by the community and by your customers and by people. And then you restrict media people from asking legitimate questions about this stuff. It's not how it was supposed to work when my parents put all the money out to build the stadium.
Yeah.
Bisciotti's picked up $600 million, hasn't said a word, hasn't answered a question, has sent Sashi and Chad down to the state house to collect the check. And meanwhile, all of this Oriole enthusiasm that you have and everybody has for hot dogs and Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, they don't have a lease, man.
Yeah.
You know, like they don't have a lease.
Well, you know,
there's so much growing on the tree outside of when's Colton Cowser getting here, which I can handle. And so can Dan Connolly because he's a professional, that question should be asked by people in the community of what trust are. I love all this Baltimore ish on the front of the jerseys where for 25 years they refused to acknowledge the team
longer than that.
Right. So all of this goes on. And it happens in a vacuum if there's no accountability for any of it, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned some of the issues locally, and I can't help but think these aren't local issues, but look at what's happened with the RSN model cratering in baseball, where you have networks that aren't paying rights fees to teams, and the Padres are now being shown on, what is it, DirecTV?
I did a long segment with Eric Fisher. I did one with Barry Bloom about all of this, and it's because they've been stealing money from people paying for their product who didn't use their product. And that's been going on as long as there's been cable television.
Sure. Sure. So you have that happening, and then I'd be remiss and, you know, not to get into it in too much detail, but what's happening with the Athletics and how, okay, you know, it is going to happen in Vegas, all the public funding they're giving them, all the BS that you hear about the exaggerated amount of local revenue it generates, which is, it's been proven time and time again that it's far less than what they claim it to be. And that's not to say there's none. There's not to say that there aren't benefits. There's not to say that you don't want to have professional sports teams. But when you consider the sweetheart deal that they get, and then, as you mentioned, no accountability to go with it. I mean, look at the
throwing media people out, not taking questions. Ownership's not available. Ownership calls itself local and isn't really local.
I mean, look at the A's here. And look, it's that's a difficult conversation because, I mean, the Raiders have left. You know, the Warriors are playing it in San Francisco now. You know, so it's not as though the A's.
Watch the Bullets and the Colts leave here. You wonder why I have some piss about me.
Sure.
From accountability. I worked at the newspaper for 12 years trying to get a football team here that then would import PR people from out of town to throw people like me out because I ask legitimate questions. So like it comes a long way. And with the Orioles, they say they're turning the corner. They have this opportunity to turn the corner, right? I mean, football's going to YouTube TV now, right?
So yeah, for Sunday ticket, sure.
Yeah, too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a fascinating landscape. And in the case of baseball specifically, because they have so much product, they do have to figure it out because the RSN model is going away, at least how it's presently constructed. So in some ways, let me be clear, I'm not empathizing because these are billionaires, but there is a problem that does need to be figured out here in terms of how you do it. And it presumably will ultimately be an a la carte streaming that you pay a subscription to stream the Orioles games. But then in the meantime, they're going to continue to splinter the games out and Peacock and all this.
Watching them do this after watching like mobile wagering get set up with, and I'm partners with the lottery and we've talked about all of this. It really is amazing what their offer is going to be, because to me, their offer has to include tickets to the game or a hat that they send you if you live in Bemidji and you're not planning on coming to games. But there has to be some connection between the media and the live and being able to purchase the third, whatever they charge for $100 for a month, you can walk around the stadium, get to go to every game, that orange carpet. There has to be some media way to not make me pay per game to watch your baseball team on my phone. Like I just don't know how many people are going to do that. And I see their crowd, and Luke, no offense to old white people, but it's a lot of old white people. And being an old white guy, or being accused of being an old white guy, I'm actually an old Hispanic guy, but there has to be a real thought process going on. TJ Brightman doesn't want to be accountable to it, but he is. And somebody's got to go up to Rob Manfred and, you know, get him out of his penthouse and explain to people what's really going on and the real complaints that people have, because baseball's la, 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 la. We don't hear any complaints. And I mean, call the Orioles and try to complain. I dare you. Find somebody at the Ravens to call to complain about something. There's no such thing, because they don't really care.
Yeah.
I'll disagree. That I couldn't get the game Sunday.
I'll disagree with what you, they hear you. They don't care. Right. I mean, they'll hear, Rob Manfred hears everything. Hearing some of his comments about what's happened with the Oakland situation. I mean, it's shameful, but they don't care. Because why? Because they're going to be more profitable doing it the way they want to do it. And that really,
Louis Rams took a dump all over St. Louis and went out to LA with an owner from Missouri who pilfered the team. Come on, man. Come on. I mean, it's like John Angelo's telling me the team's going to be here as long as the Rockets' red glare. Dude, don't think he's not watching this Oakland situation. He's got Wes wrapped around his finger. He's got all, like, John Angelo's just looking to make the big play in Baltimore. Yeah. And Wes can roll over and give it to him. And who even knows what he's asking for at this point? Because reporters aren't allowed to ask questions about civic money, about public money.
Yeah. And ultimately, you know, the unfortunate part here, and I say this as someone who depends on sports as my livelihood, so I'm not saying this to be disparaging, but in a way I am. Generally speaking, cities and states and governments, they do it because they know if they don't, someone else will at some point in time. And Oakland's finding this out right now, although certainly I'm not blaming the government there as much as what's been horrible ownership that, you know, even from where it was 20 years ago. I mean, a once proud franchise going out the way it is, it's a darn shame. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope they change their underwear when they get to Las Vegas and do a brand shift. To honor Charlie Finley for Washington or anywhere, they would have given him a buck. He moves the one that moved the team from Kansas City out there. So Pirates begat Pirates. Luke will be pirating our ship against the Seattle Mariners all weekend at Camden Yards. Obviously, the Ravens taking some downtime, which is what this whole segment was about from the beginning. You can find Luke at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet travels and your Wi-Fi will allow you. You can also find me out on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all those sort of normal places as well. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Thursday. Southwest Baltimore will be at Spirits West over near Mount St. Joe and St. Agnes, Central St. Agnes as well. That's 2 until 5 on Thursday. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play some throwback scratch-offs as well as our friends at Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.